PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week are the partners or the co-owners of Turtleson, Mr. Greg Oakley and Mr. Chet Sikorski. Did I nail the names, or is it a disaster?
No, you nailed it.
Fantastic. Not pretty easy, Chet's. That was good, Dan. That was good.
Well, I'm really excited to have you on. This actually stemmed from an article that Ryan put up on the THP homepage that really got the community talking about your product. It's kind of funny the way that works. When things are intriguing, people say, all right, well, maybe we need to know more. So, you know, obviously, I'd love to direct folks over there to take a look. You really get an in-depth perspective on the attention to detail, the different types of material that Turtleson has. But we can dive real deep here, and that's what I'd love to do today. Start because you guys have a fairly storied history, not only in apparel, but also as partners in the industry. It sounds like you guys have been friends for an awful long time.
Yeah, we have. I guess since second grade. Is that right, Chet? That's when we first met, and ended up graduating high school from the same high school, and we're roommates at Tennessee in college. So we go way back. We've actually been in business together since 1999 when we first got into the apparel business. So yeah, we know where all the bodies are buried.
That's great. Well, that's a long time to at least get an overview of what is needed, what people look for, what people desire when it comes to apparel. Did it feel like switching into Turtleson gave you a chance to really focus in on that which you thought mattered most? What was the original concept around starting this brand?
So starting Turtleson, yeah, I think there's that's part of it. You know, wanting to really kind of focus in on sort of our personal tastes, what we like to see in the market. And then also a very strong desire to build a brand in our hometown of Bristol, Tennessee. We're in the mountains of Northeast Tennessee, which typically is not thought of as the fashion capital of the world, Dan. I'm not sure you know that or not, but not your typical place for an apparel brand. And we had been trying to do it for a long time, and it had some good starts. And but Turtleson was the way not only to kind of bring product to the market that we wanted to see, but also to really dig some deep roots in our hometown and build a global brand, which was our goal here in Bristol, Tennessee.
Okay. So was that a path you didn't feel like you could take previous to that? Or was it just something that you got to a point where you landed and then started moving forward on your next project?
Yeah, I don't think it was that we didn't think we could. We just weren't very successful at it. You know, we tried, and circumstance of the apparel business, you know, we obviously have a background and two of the brands we start, Peter Millar was obviously the more notable one. The growth of business and developments, successful brands, and you know we got some investment and the business moved out of Bristol. So you know it wasn't that like I said, we had tried several times, but ultimately those businesses relocated once we brought in investors and partners and things like that. So Turtleson is our effort to finally have one stick here in Bristol.
That's great. You know, one of the funny parts about being hugely invested in golf is you get like a halfway sense of fashion, mostly like what you think looks good. And by you, I mean the golfer. And then there are companies that truly commit their style and their brand to the golfing experience. And there's plenty that make a golf shirt, but don't really care when it comes down to it. Does Turtleson have like a really true identity when it comes to that? Or are you solving a lot of problems for people out there beyond the golf course?
You know, when you say experience, I think for us, that's probably the key word. We like to think of ourselves as a golf inspired lifestyle brand. So it is more than just on the course for us. The reality is Chet and I, we used to play a ton of golf, but as we've gotten older and you know, had families and other obligations, we don't play quite as much golf as we used to. And so, and I think it's about the experience and sort of the lifestyle that sort of evolves and is a part of golf and the golf community. And that's where we really see our product fitting in, is not just on the golf course. I think we make, you know, the best golf shirt in the business, and we sell, that's by far the largest volume product that we sell. But, you know, we do a lot of other things, like Chet and I both have on sort of golfy, non-golfy products right now. You know, I've got on the Anders Merino hoodie, which I would play golf in, but I'd also, you know, go out to dinner. And so it definitely is built for more than just golf.
Yeah. The nice thing about golf is it does serve a lot of different angles. You go from extreme heat to extreme cold. And I feel like serving the golf industry from an apparel perspective, you actually land on a lot of those like outdoorsy type experiences that are like everyday lifestyle experiences. But my gripe with a lot of companies that are out there is, well, they all end up in California for one. And, you know, California doesn't get the same kind of things we deal with in Ohio or for you guys, Tennessee. It's always refreshing to see a company that's really forward in that. Well, we understand there are actually four seasons to our golf year, and there's a willingness to accommodate all of those things. So rather than being, well, I have this company for my outer layer, I have this company for when it's hot out. I feel like Turtleson, at least what I've seen, just perusing the website, reading Ryan's review, there's an understanding that there are different temperatures throughout the day, throughout the year.
That's right. And you're right. We are in four season territory here. You know, we have a true spring, summer, fall, and winter. So we experience them all, and you can see that, you know, in our product, from, you know, performance golf shirts when it's 95 or 100 degrees, which, and humid, which it gets here, to you know, really outerwear that serves you well when it's 20 degrees and snow on the ground, which we get that here too. So yeah, I think that's what's great about our brand and our product, is that we do sort of run the spectrum of not just product, but categories. And it really gives our customer the ability to really sort of make the apparel work for them, and sort of almost wearable gear is what we tend to think of it as. So.
Mm. Do you feel like Bristol as a whole helps to define the brand from a presentation, from a perspective, when you know, you see different parts of the country have certainly a different vibe when you go there and you hang out and see the way the locals dress? Does Bristol have that kind of component to it, or are you pulling or drawing from other things?
It, you know, it does. And I'm not sure that we've taken full advantage of that. You know, there's I mentioned earlier that Bristol's not exactly the fashion capital of the world. And I almost think over the years in the past, we've sort of hidden from that a little bit, you know, and as we mature as a brand, and we're starting to really lean into it and embrace it. I mean, it's part of who we are. It certainly impacts our product. Four seasons we just talked about. But yeah, we're really starting to lean into it and embrace it. And certainly has a big impact on who we are as a company and culture. And then you can see the expression of that in our product as well. So yeah, I'd say we're starting to own that.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I'm always fascinated. And again, listen, I'm coming from a totally outside perspective. My experience is based on what my pro shop stocks of the golf course, or what I can go to big box, or you know, some of the nicer stores around and try on and experience for myself. I'm a big tactile person. I have to touch it first. If it doesn't feel right, I'm going to be a little cranky and just walk away. But you know, that that component, one of the things that always bothers me is someone has a good idea and then everyone replicates it. And that's from an apparel perspective. It's like, well, you know, I want to be represented. Part of having a logo on the chest or the shoulder is like, all right, well, that's who I feel like I identify with. And it's more than just a piece of apparel that I bought and, you know, does the job of covering up my body in the cold or the warm weather. Do you feel like chasing trends is problematic in the industry right now? Do you try and avoid a lot of that, or do you understand that there are trends that must follow?
Well, I think we've sort of built careers in a business by not chasing the trends. That doesn't mean that we don't pay attention to what's happening and we don't react and adjust, but we don't chase. That's just not who. There are plenty of brands out there that do it and do a great job. But I like to say, if you know, fashion is ever evolving and ever changing. And I like to sort of, you know, talk about if one extreme's over here and then the trend is over here and they're bouncing back and forth, we sort of oscillate here in the middle. You know, we do adapt and evolve and grow, but we're certainly not out there chasing trends. We're staying true to who we are, as much because we don't know any better as that's who we are. You know,
yeah.
It is as much probably a limitation in our ability, or you know, just not how we think, and it's not how we live our lives, and so that all kind of just comes out in the company. So we're definitely not trying to change who we are and what the product is with the, you know, the current trends. Again, that's not to say that we don't evolve and we're mindful of it. We're not stagnant. We, you know, obviously you have to evolve and grow as a brand, and we do that, but we intentionally are not out there trying to tag on to what we see that's hot. And then it happens a lot. You're right. And it's not who we are. It's not how we look to grow a business and a brand. We think that there's value and true success with consistency and being around, and you know, really time is a big part of that, and constantly chasing the latest thing is not how we define success and how we want to define the Turtleson brand.
Yeah. I mean, imitation ignorance is pretty hard to find in 2025. So the idea that that's a perspective you own and you value is actually, I think, quite a good thing. And I'd love your perspective on this, because again, I'm looking at this from a totally different angle, but you know, I wore the plaid shorts and pants 20 years ago to play golf in. I wore the blank colored shirts for the longest time because the shorts were, you know, spicy and fun and different. And then everyone switched to the patterned shirts, and suddenly, you know, these huge shifts happen. What is it like looking at that from a brand? How do you, when you see something really take off, do you collectively look at it and say, can we make that fall into our identity? Or do you say, maybe we should avoid this one?
Well, probably a combination of both. You know, really, if it's something, look, if we think it's cool and we can interpret it, then, you know, we probably will. You know, look, you know, we're we're not so set in our ways that think that we're so right that we're not open minded. And yeah, if we see something that really strikes us, we'll take a look at it and see, you know, how we might can shape it in to where it fits with what we're trying to do. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, I'll just, as an example, there's a lot of camouflage out in the market now. And really for the last, 3 to 5 years, you've seen a lot of polos and quarter zips. And we have never done that. Now that doesn't mean there's not a way to express that fits with who we are, but that's just a path that we haven't gone down, and you see a lot of our competitors that have. So, you know, things like that we do look at and evaluate. We have conversations about, and doesn't mean that there may not be something like that in our future, but it would be in a way that we feel like you know, sort of fits more with our brand. And as we again sort of lean into more of our area and our locations and sort of the mountains of the Southeast and Northeast Tennessee, you know, we'll keep looking at that and seeing. So yeah, we're not opposed to taking something and shaping it, making it our own. I mean, look, the reality is, you know, 25 years ago, there weren't a whole lot of performance golf shirts out there. And it was
cotton. I know.
And we were, you know, I was a cotton guy, still am, still have on a cotton shirt today. But you know, if we didn't sort of embrace performance, I'm not sure where Turtleson would be right now. So you've got to be careful. The we want to build a great brand and a great culture and be true to who we are. But you know, if we're not changing and adapting, we may not keep the lights turned on. That's pretty important too, Dan. So,
Well, adapting around your own world, your own realm of competency is definitely something that I respect a lot. I think people are looking to make a quick buck sometimes, and it's hard to do that. There are plenty of examples where I've been completely in love with something only to have the company shift their identity in a different way that no longer represents my perspective as someone walking down the street, a golfer, whatever you want to call me. It loses sight on the personal identity.
Yeah. And I think those brands can burn out. You know, I think it's one of those things you know, a hot flame burns pretty fast. And if you do catch that trend, it's great. And there's a lot of short-term success to be had there, but that's not what we're looking for. You know, we're looking to be around. We're looking to, you know, we want to be the benchmark in 20 years. We want people to look at Turtles and say, you know, they're still not the biggest. that'll probably be true, but they're doing things the right way. And, you know, they just keep gaining momentum. That's kind of what we're looking to do. And I hope that's the path we're on.
Yeah. I'd love to know from a material perspective, cause you mentioned not everything's cotton anymore and, you know, thank goodness for that. But what's it like traversing these last couple of decades as the blends start to really show up, these different types of materials that can do way more than what you had previously? Has that been fun to explore? Has it been a bit concerning, or like what's the take on that?
I think it's been fun to explore. And you know, we're constantly developing fabrics and working with mills and factories, you know, trying to find new things and be innovative and stay, you know, on the top of and forefront of kind of what's happening out there. What's interesting for a brand our size, it's sometimes difficult to sort of swing that pendulum. You know, we've been too early in some things. We started out, 26 years ago with Tencel. And back then there was one mill in the U.S. making it. Nobody was using it. And Chet and I had the bright idea that we would. And our first show, Burlington Sportswear, went out of business. They were the only people that made it. So, it's sometimes tough to be at the forefront when you're a smaller company, but we continue. We're working on some cool stuff right now that I think will be coming, that I think, you know, will help set us apart. And again, really keep evolving as a brand to where, you know, we really see Turtleson going.
Nice. Is there a material that speaks loudest for you between sales or between people get their hands on it and think like, man, this is a really special piece of material here?
I think that yes. And then there's probably a couple of different answers to that. One, our golf shirt fabric. I mean, it's a poly spandex blend, which is horribly ordinary in the market right now. You know, most of the performance golf shirts out there are, but we're using a different yarn than everybody I know. There might be somebody out there doing it. But I guess spring 25, was this the first season, Chet, or when did we switch that, our poly yarn? It's been a season or two, I guess.
I think, yeah.
And the hand is incredible. I mean, it feels to me as close to cotton as anything out there. And it doesn't have quite the sheen that typical shirts do. It's not slinky. So we're very proud of our basic performance shirt that we use in our golf shirts. But the other thing that I think people look to for us, and you mentioned you were a tactile guy earlier, is our natural yarns. You know, we're merinos. Chet and I both, I think, have on merino sweaters today, and we're doing some cool merino blends. And that's one of the things. I think there's a real opportunity to incorporate some natural fibers back into some of these blends, and, you know, done the right way, I think you can keep the same ease of care that you get from 100%, man-made fiber. And I think you get some really cool benefits. So that's something that we're kind of working on and trying to master at this point.
The one thing I keep referencing Ryan's review, because it does really highlight a number of different pieces from your, I think it's the fall and winter release, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. It's the Belfield hoodie that I instantly, you know, flock to. And again, I'm a visual, textual, or tactile guy. So this is a sort of non-traditional presentation where something like I'm wearing now, you get that, that heathered look, but it's very smooth. Whereas the Belfield, like, there's a lot more going on with that. And I get a sense that type of design, that sort of like non-flat presentation, has to be growing in interest.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, but it's a great fabric. It's got cotton modal, poly, and spandex, and it's quilted, so it's got a little texture to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels fantastic.
It's our number one seller right now. So you hit on a good one there. And internally around the office, it's a favorite too. I just, Chad in marketing, saw him walk through the hall earlier, he had it in his hand. He said, "I'm convinced this is the greatest product ever." we've got to keep out, you know, and it's bulletproof. We're hard on clothes around here, because if we get something, we kind of abuse it to see what happens. And that thing, I've probably washed and thrown that thing in the dryer 20 times now, and it looks great. So yeah,
really?
Chet mentioned the quilting. It's not a stitched quilt. It's more knitted into the fabric to give that effect. And sometimes you just hit on one, and that one, we all liked it when we were developing it, and when it came out, we all thought it was cool, but that thing has taken on a life of its own since it hit the market.
Interesting. You mentioned durability, and that is something I'm both terrified and incredibly intrigued by, because I'm the type of guy, I'm afraid to put anything in the dryer now based on my experiences in the past.
You're smart, my wife, man.
Yeah, I yes. mean, well, yeah, this is a 20-year thing. I've been doing my own laundry because the wife unintentionally put something in the dryer once and ruined about half my stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I'm one of the few hang dryers out there. But well, I do that
the right way. I'll tell you, you are. We, like I said, we abuse things because we want to see what happens. Mm. And, you know, care instructions, 8 times out of 10, it's going to say tumble dry, low, warm iron. Yeah. Don't put things in the dryer. Belfield, you can. And a lot of our stuff you can, but, you know, heat and abrasion just kill clothing. And dryer, you know, it's convenient, but yeah. And most of our stuff, we look at that a lot, and we do wash and dry test here in our design area. So we know how they react, and, you know, our we're very mindful of that. Our products, when we're developing and building out our products, we're laundering them, we're throwing them in the dryer to see what happens, and then trying to give care instructions. What's funny is we've gone on our website now, we got a email. This came up in a meeting, maybe about somebody was talking about their merino sweater or something that they'd thrown in the dryer here in the office. And I'm like, oh God, I'm like, you know, first of all, you don't need to wash it, you know, unless you really get it dirty, just don't wash it. And so we started talking about that. And I said something about how I care for our polo shirts. And I just throw them in the wash machine. When it's over, I take them right out. I hang them up. I button the top button. I fold the collar down and kind of mat it. And, you know, an hour later, it looks brand new. And so they're like, we really should put real world care instructions on our website. So we all kind of answered the questions of how do we actually care for our stuff when we're not trying to beat it up and see what happens. Good, and yeah. So our website, we're kind of going away from the required care instructions that are in every garment to some sort of real world, this is how we take care of our product on the website. And it's kind of an interesting take. I've never seen anybody do that. And it wasn't my idea. I was just like, what are you doing? but it's kind of cool. And but you're right. I mean, really, you know, if you want something really to last, the dryer is not always your friend. So
it's almost like a minimum octane in a car. Yeah, <that's right. laughs> care instructions, minimum care instructions.
Yeah,
pretty good.
And it kind of, you know, it depends on what you want to look, what you want it to look like cotton.
Yeah.
I'll throw all my cotton in the dryer. Cause that's the look I want, you know, and it's going to weather a little bit, and cotton, no matter what it says, you're going to get a little bit of shrinkage and, you know, and if that's okay, that, you know, so all my cotton stuff, I dry intentionally, not just to beat up, just that's how I like to wear my stuff. So
the reality of it from my perspective is that apparel isn't cheap, and especially quality apparel isn't cheap no matter how you go about it. If you want cheap apparel, go down to like the local TJ Maxx or whatever you want, just buy a couple pieces that'll last you a season. It's not a big deal, but you know, I look at my wardrobe as a reflection of me, and I personally think it's important to really care for it as I launder it. And I would love to ask that question back to you when it, as you've mentioned numerous times, that you really challenge the different types of materials. Is it a little bit disheartening when you find a really interesting fabric or design style and it just cannot last the test of time?
It really is. And we've, you know, you love the hand on something, you'll love the look. And it just won't hold up. A lot of it, you know, that we see, and it's so prevalent in the market right now. There are a lot of rayons out there. I mentioned Tencel earlier, sort of the original, Tencels, Models, which we use a lot of. And what we find is, you have to just watch the content in the blend. The Belfield has Model in it, but the content, a little bit of poly, the cotton, it really holds up. It, in some blends, especially if you get real rayon heavy, you know, you'll see some pilling over time. That's probably our biggest pet peeve out there is pilling in product and ours. And, you know, we see it in all of our competitors. It's kind of a fact of life. You're doing a good job of laundering your product. You probably see very little of it, even in products that we know may have a tendency to do that when it hits the dryer. So yeah, we've had some great product that's not hit the market because we just didn't feel, even though we do testing, we have our mills do testing and we get ratings and we know, you know, what's acceptable, what's going to, but then we go over here and we throw it in the washer and dryer. And that's the real test. It's not the rating that we get from the mill that's perfectly acceptable. It's the rating when we do it here in our headquarters, and we say, yeah, but I'm not sure that's gonna cut it. So yeah, it is disheartening because there's some really cool stuff out there that we've gotten very far down the line with that we've pulled the plug on. So
wow. Well, I assume that the reality of what your product looks like a year after purchase is just as impactful as it is day one. And I also assume that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the online review, the sort of public presentation of people's perspective of your brand can both cripple and really power a business forward. So I'd love to know, do you take a lot of your feedback to heart, and does that sort of propel things forward? Or do you understand that the most vocal are few, the sad few are the most vocal usually.
Yeah. We take it to heart, and we're trying to even get more of it. So the reviews on the website are great. Generally on the website, somebody either really loves it or they really don't like it. You know, you don't get a whole lot of, sort of in the middle objectivity. So, you know, we're starting to do, some consumer feedback type programs to you know, to get feedback, and not only on performance, but just on what they see from the line, what they like, what they don't like, and, you know, just trying to keep up with the taste. But yeah, you do have to wade through it a bit. You know, if you get it's sometimes easy to tell if somebody has not taken care of it the right way. You know, if it's a, you know, a natural fiber sweater, cashmere sweater that all of a sudden their toddler can't wear, it's a pretty safe bet that they put that in the washer and the dryer. So, you know,
saying the guy in the office left you a review after he put his merino sweater in the dryer. Yeah.
So, but no, we take him seriously. Listen, that's what it's all about. Doesn't matter really what we think. If it's not resonating out there with the customer and they don't like what we're doing, or they don't think the product's holding up, then it, you know, everything we're doing here doesn't really matter. So yeah, we take it seriously and we look at it.
That's great. That's an important thing and something you don't usually get from the bigger names that don't put the same kind of focus in. And I've had these conversations a couple times with companies who still have a connection to their users, not like a Nike or an Adidas or something like that, where it genuinely doesn't matter to them. And one of the things that I think is most interesting is these types of companies, your type of company, has things that really let them stand apart. And I would hate to go through this whole thing without really mentioning the Stanwell collar, because it sounds like that is a primary component to your polo. And I'd love to give you the opportunity to express what exactly that means.
Sure. Well, thank you. We're proud of it too. Probably 2 years ago, maybe two and a half, we launched what we called the Polo Project internally. And we just took our polo and just took it down to the studs. We literally cut it open. We had a lot of competitor product that we were evaluating just to figure out what we felt like was the best possible polo out there. And there were a few things that came out of it. Some that you may not even notice, some little tweaks to our tech designer really dug in. And so there's a few tweaks that made the shirt just a better fit. Didn't really change your size, but just cleaned up the overall look of it. But by far the biggest thing that came out was the Stanwell collar. And, you know, collars right now are a hot topic in the world of golf, and everybody's, you know, a lot of people are going to collar stays and, you know, different ways to make the collar stiff, really is sort of what it amounts to have it hold its shape. And, you know, that was not what we wanted. You know, I think that, really a great, not just golf shirt, but a garment has to be balanced. You know, you don't want a nice shirt that moves and stretches with you to have a collar that, you know, that cuts you when you turn over. So we kind of went the opposite way. And I call it really the first truly engineered collar in golf. And it's not propped up with plastic and stays. It is all about sort of this proprietary construction that we did. And we brought in a fusible company that our tech designer had a long history with. And we sat down with them and really came up with this fusible, and then worked with the tech designer, who she really did. I say we worked with her concept of really, I don't know, the sort of a revolutionary way to build out the inside of the collar. And again, I refer to it when I'm talking to people as really the first engineered collar in golf. And so what you get is a collar that's still soft and flexible, but it holds its shape and it truly looks as good. I have the first, everybody in the office got a prototype when we first started messing with it. I still have and wear that prototype of that collar. I've been wearing it for 2 years now. And I mean, I've worn that thing out, and I take it out of the washing and I hang it up, button the top collar, fold the collar down, and it looks like I just took it out of the bag. And so the collar moves with you. You know, the first thing I do if I buy a dress shirt, I don't wear as many ties as I used to, but I take the collar stays out because I don't want, you know, what feels like a cast around your neck. And sure, this collar, you know, it accomplishes that. So it moves with you and it's flexible, but it's soft and holds its shape. And I think it's the best collar in golf, and we're getting some people that agree with that. So we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, there are great examples. I wasn't really that interested in collars other than the fact that I hated when they would fray up at the end or, you know, lay super flat against my body. Those are things that really bothered me. It wasn't until I started paying closer attention that I realized how much it bothered me. And now I can't even watch the Ryder Cup without getting mad at the bacon collar that's going on the whole time. Like, what's that like for you guys seeing that and thinking, like, how is that acceptable when we have such a great concept here and people are willingly ignoring that?
I'm going to be a little careful here. You know, thank goodness that's not our shirt looking like that. yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I have a great answer for you on that, Dan. I think that there's a lot of things out there that people live with. And you know, we make a great product. We do a lot of things right. One of the things that we're not great at is sort of getting our story out there. And so, you know, it's frustrating to maybe not have that instant access to get your message out there, which we appreciate, you know, guys like you and Hackers Paradise for helping sort of tell our story, but it's frustrating. And I know I'm not giving you a very good answer here.
That's a great answer.
It is honestly frustrating.
It's real. And I think people need to pay more attention to what could matter to them and stop overlooking the things that just look horrible when it comes down to it.
You know, what we talk about here a lot with our customer and what we're doing is we really believe that our customer cares about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that they're more concerned with that than they are of wearing what is perceived to be the hot brand or the popular brand out there. They're less concerned about fitting in as they are about finding, you know, something that works for them, they like, and they believe in. And so we're just, you know, continuing to try to do what we do and get people to, you know, see that and know who we are.
Understood. Well, I love how simple the logo is. It's very natural. I think it fits in a lot of settings, unlike some of the logos that are out there. The 11 stitch pattern is a really cool small feature. I'll let people go and figure that out on their own because I do have other questions, and I probably only got have you guys for so long. I'm really curious because we've talked a lot about trends, but I'm always fascinated when it comes to apparel companies. It's almost like they know what colors are going to hit in the following year or what color palettes are going to hit in the following year. Do you follow that sort of cycle? Do you stay true to the colors that you're looking to add? What is that like?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the first part of our design process, and we've got a fabulous design team. I'd love to tell you that Chet and I do all that, but we don't. but we already, so our color palette for spring 27 has been set now for probably close to a month. And, we kind of attack it a couple of different ways. We do, and I'm including myself in this we, which is unfair to our talented design team. But they do a lot of research on trends and seeing what colors are coming up, and that is a big and most critical step in the early process of our design process. Literally nothing happens until they set that color palette. And it, you're right, it's set so far in advance.
So you did say spring of 27, right? 27. Not 26, 27. No, 27. That's how far ahead we are.
Yeah, and like I said, that was probably done in October. Is that, Chet, sound right?
Yeah.
October of 25, we have our color palette set for spring of 27. And we feel like we're late. We're constantly trying to drive our calendar, you know, earlier and earlier. I would imagine if you talk to some larger brands, they probably have it set before then, you know, that have, you know, a larger staff. We've got a great design team, but they have a lot of balls in the air. So, mm-hmm. you know, some other brands may have people, that's all they do is they're forecasting color trends. And it's pretty incredible. You know, when you do get to the launch of a season that's been 2 years in the making, and you see the similarities a lot of times between the color palettes, and, you know, they're a trend report, so it's not all picking it out of thin air, but yeah, that's a crazy part of it. When people hear that, they're like, what?
I just did it now. And even though I knew you were going to say it,
yeah,
I did it myself. It's like, you double take. Cause it's like, how do you know what I want to wear in a year and a half? And then suddenly you get there and it's like, well, why do I like this color now? It's just such a natural thing. I'm really curious when it comes to connecting locally or getting into pro shops, the sort of green grass style, are you growing in the number of pro shops you're in? Are you focused on different things, selling on the website? What's the primary goal?
So, yeah, we're growing. We're still, you know, our green grass business is up 20% or so this year. And that's fairly typical. I mean, we're not a tiny company anymore. We're not massive. So that kind of growth is good for us. And, you know, we're exceeding our plans on the green grass side. We're still opening new doors in golf. You know, we're probably in, I would say probably 900,000 maybe true green grass shops in the US. And yeah, there's a lot more doors we could be in. Part of that is our rep structure. You know, we've got some great reps out there covering large territories. So there's the nature of the beast is they can't get to everybody. So, you know, one thing we're looking at doing to continue that growth would be to, you know, get better penetration within each territory, maybe, you know, dividing some territories and giving some of our existing reps a break who are, you know, driving 8 hours from one end of their territory to the other. So those are the kinds of things we're talking about. Our online business is growing much faster than that. Part of the reason is it's still such a small piece of our business. We're primarily a wholesale company. You know, Chad, my background is in wholesale. Most of our key people that have been with us for a while are more wholesale people. But just in the last really year or two, we've brought on some really talented people that understand the digital side of our business. And so that business is growing exponentially, and we look for that to continue. Our international business is growing pretty rapidly. We've got an office outside of London in Milton Keynes that kind of manages the UK and Europe for us. And then we've got distributors in Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. So, and that's strictly green grass business over there. And then here in the States, we also sell them in specialty stores, and that business is healthy too. So, you know, our business is good, and it's, you know, it's growing, and we continue to hit our targets and exceed them. This year has been a great year. So yeah, it's, we want to keep it going. Golf will always be, you know, a focus for us. There's a lot of other opportunity out there that our line fits. And so obviously we're exploring those channels as well. Collegiate is fairly new to us. And, it's just been a bit eye opening, you know, that channel is so, the potential is so large there. So.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
it's exciting. We've got a lot of good stuff going on, and we're excited about it. So.
I'd love to ask you a sort of loaded final question, and I'll let you have an out.
We'll let Chad answer this one. Well,
it was going to be both. It's sort of a three-parter. I'll allow you to answer all three or just the ones you want to. What's your favorite piece from the current lineup? What is the piece that's most underrepresented that you want people to know about? And as a, like a little third one, is there a trend you wish was never a thing in apparel? Chet, I'll start with you.
My favorite piece is the Ace Bird's Eye Merino Crew Neck Sweater. It's we always did a bird's eye and a quarter zip, but we never did it in a crew neck. And so that's my favorite. I got it the other day and I wear the heck out of it.
Nice.
And then the most underrated piece I think is our woven shirt. Our woven is, I think, the best out there. The collar, it's kind of like a spread button down collar. and it fits great. And it just, I think that's just underrated. I think that our woven shirt is fantastic. And then what was the third? I can't.
It's, is there one trend you wish was never a thing in apparel?
Ooh. I might have to get back with you.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Greg, I'll send it to you.
Okay. The favorite thing for the season is going to be tough for me because I had three really distinct favorites this year. And what's funny, Dan, you know, every season we have favorites, but you know, if we bought and wore our favorites every season, I'd need to, you know, two offices to hold my clothes. So sometimes I don't even get the favorite things in the closet. But this year, the Belfield, this hoodie that I'm wearing, I thought was the coolest thing we'd ever done. It's this Fair Isle with the hood on it. It was so different. And I was like, that defines Turtles to me. And the other thing was the Kinzel reversible jacket.
Interesting.
And it is really, it's sort of a real plain. I don't know if you're familiar with the Kinzel, but it kind of just a plain, soft quilted outerwear piece. I mean, it's, you know, it's a coat and it's blue sort of, it's not nylon, but it sort of has that look. It's not shiny like a puffy coat, but then you reverse it to almost a gray flannel. And it's the first coat we've made reversible pieces in the past, and they're fun to talk about. But the reality is sometimes you'll turn them inside out and put them on, and you're like, what in the world? This thing, I'll literally wear it to work, you know, with the navy side out. And when I take it off, I just pull it off and, you know, pull the sleeves inside out, and I'll wear it back home on the gray side. So those three, if I had to pick one, it might be the Kinzel. I just think that was such a simple piece and so cool. And, I think so. This, like I said, the belt and this are close. But I think
Dan, the one he has on, he wears practically almost
every day. I wear this one. It's just so cool.
That's great.
I you know what? I hate to agree with Chet, but I was going to say our woven shirt also. We make a great woven. Most of the wovens we make are cotton. We do some brush flannels in the fall and some great twills. With so much of our wholesale business being golf, they just don't buy. You know, that's more of a performance world. We haven't had a whole lot of luck changing that. So that tends to be a category that doesn't do great for us. And it's some of the best product we make. So that would probably be the one that I would agree with Chet that it's probably underserved. And then in fashion, I always say the and I'm going to say something that's coming. That's the problem with fashion. It always comes back. And this one's coming and I don't want it to, but the double forward pleat pants.
Oh no.
Yeah. I think they're coming back and they probably will, but I really am a fan of the flat front, you know, plain pant trouser look. And the thought of going back to the forward pleats and baggy legs, I'm struggling with, but it's coming.
Yeah. I'm stocking up now. I know these bigger pants are coming. I can't be looking like that. I love the thinner pants way too much.
I do too. I think that was that should stick around. So I would now, if we're talking 2 years from now, Dan, and we're all about the forward pleat and the baggy pant, don't bring this tape up and say,
no, I'm going to hang my boots.
Chase trends.
No way. I remember those days in the big pants. That was high school, and I'm not going back to that. I can't do it.
It's just a matter of time, though.
Well, what an absolute pleasure talking with you gentlemen today. It's been really fun to get to know the brand a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Funny enough, there are guys in my regular group who just happen to have Turtles and apparel that they're wearing around. One of the guys had a beautiful outerwear piece that was clearly wind resistant that he's been wearing. It's like, oh yeah, they're kind of everywhere while sort of secretly being some people's favorite products. So it's nice to get both sides of it. And now to hear your story, to understand that you guys have sort of maintained that local presence. And I love it. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Buy those guys a beer when you're playing golf for the next time.
Yeah. I'll let them know it's on Greg's tab somehow.
There you go. Just send me the bill. Send it to Chet. C-H-E.
There we go. Well, yeah, this will be going live probably in early December, which is good for me because you guys have a crazy Black Friday sale. The unfortunate part of doing your research is you find out just exactly how many things you want that are now all on sale. So I'll be doing that this afternoon. And awesome. Yeah, really look forward to seeing what's coming down the pipe and what the colors are for spring of 27.
If you want to, we'll give you a little heads up, give you a little email, give you a glimpse.
Perfect. I love it. Well, gentlemen, happy holidays and look forward to
happy
seeing
holidays
you.
Happy holidays to you, Dan.
Yeah, all man. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this week, have a great time. Make it count and go check out Turtleson. They're pretty awesome and they have great stuff on the website. And see what the 11 stitching is about. That's your homework. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey guys and gals, Professor Don back here to answer another question for you. This week's question is from someone who needs to get out and touch a little bit of grass. Question is, how do shaft adapters that go into the drivers play into the design of the golf shaft? And the answer is, they don't really. Even though the adapters weigh a little bit different from one company to another, we're generally looking at the total head mass when we design a golf shaft, and that stays relatively the same. The one place where you guys have to watch out for it is when you're getting fit. If you're using an adapter that's universal, it may weigh more than an adapter that you get in the finish club, and that can mess with your swing weights, so just make sure you pay attention to that. Hope that answers your question. Go outside, touch some grass. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.